Howdy. This is a short summary of my revolutionary new political system for full freedom that I call juristocracy. I chose the name from the Latin root juris, meaning right or upright. I'm going to summarize my motivation, my approach, the key features of the system, and then why I think you should care. Juristocracy grew out of a strong hunch I'd had for years. Now, when we look at Ayn Rand's philosophy, the thing that presents over and over was how she refused to accept long-held premises that were baked into the foundations of existing philosophic systems. She rooted those out and replaced them with properly formulated new ideas. But with regard to political systems, and particularly the American one, there seems to be a widely prevalent conservatism among objectivists. People seem to think we just need to make a few nips and tucks to our constitution, somehow get better judges, revise some laws, and then poosh, a stable free society. Well, I've challenged that conventional wisdom, and it was a good thing I did. What I've done is examine every seemingly unchecked premise about government, many stretching back to antiquity, and what I found were some major errors that were incompatible with a government intended to be the foundation of a fully free society. Using Ayn Rand's inductive integrative approach, I've formulated correct elements in their stead. Okay, let's dive in. To begin with, juristocracy is formally based on two necessary intellectual foundations. The first is Ayn Rand's moral and political philosophy, particularly her three seminal essays on morality, rights, and the nature of government. The second is the comprehensive explanation of and defense of capitalism made by Ludwig von Mises in his book Human Action. These two foundations are essential. It would not be possible to properly understand juristocracy nor implement it without understanding its foundations. As a note, juristocracy accepts most contemporary agencies and departments that are proper functions of government to be in the large correct. So, for example, police services, courts, prisons, land title offices, and others. I'm sure all can do with some reforms, but you can just accept those as implied parts. Okay, let's dive into what makes juristocracy different. I explain these as what I call the five pillars of juristocracy. These are critical, necessary features that enable it to be a government of freedom, not just for a few years after founding, but permanently on into the future. The first pillar shouldn't be a surprise to objectivists. It is laissez-faire capitalism. Ayn Rand explained the moral imperative of laissez-faire capitalism as a necessary feature of protecting individual rights. Ludwig von Mises demonstrated it as economically necessary, both since all interventions cause unintended economic distortions, and also because any intervention violates the voluntary choices of individuals. The second pillar is in some ways a logical subset of the first, but I establish it as a pillar due to the universal and inevitably disastrous interventions in the area by pretty much all governments in recorded history. Pillar two is completely free market money and banking. The government may have no role whatsoever in money, not even minting coins. Its only duty is to establish criminal offenses against forging monetary items or securities. Modern money and central banking are abominations, moral and practical abominations. Money arises naturally in any free market. There is no need whatsoever for the government to be involved. Pillar three, citizenship in juristocracy is not bestowed automatically at birth. If someone wants to become a citizen when they reach majority, they may apply. The criteria for acceptance are strict. The first is demonstrating a solid understanding of ideas crucial for a responsible citizen to know. These include the history of freedom, civics knowledge of their own government, and a basic but thorough understanding of the free market and capitalism. The second and most important criteria is pledging an oath to fully support individual rights and the institutions of their government that protect it. And the oath cannot be contradicted by any facts known of the applicant. This pillar is a profoundly important change from practice stretching back to antiquity. All relationships in a fully free society are voluntary. This includes the relationship of an individual to their government in the form of being a citizen. But the most important point here is a moral one. The government of a fully free society is strictly limited to the agencies and actions demonstrably needed for the protection of individual rights and nothing more. Being a citizen entitles you to affect the operation of the government. By rights, only a person who swears to uphold rights has any moral claim to become a citizen. There is no such thing as a right to violate rights. Pillar 4 has some parallels to citizenship. First, let's get something straight. Country under juristocracy is something that exists. It is an existent with many properties that a random tract of land doesn't possess. It is a defined extent of territory over which the government has jurisdiction. The only rational way to conceive of this land is as a special type of non-economic property held jointly in trust by the citizens for the benefit of all residents. Private property exists within the context of this outer containing property. The citizens of a country have a set of rights of action over this property that are necessary to create their morally consistent freedom-supporting government. They have the right to make laws that apply to the entire territory, to establish courts and other agencies that protect rights, to codify legal recognition of private property, and most critically, they have a right to defend their border. Now, there is a point that cannot be emphasized too strongly. Free countries don't grow on trees. They are the exception, not the norm. Many people typically fight for and even die in the struggle to achieve freedom. The people who create a free society do so selfishly for their own benefit, that of their family, friends, and all those others who cherish and will flourish in freedom. A free country is not an altruistic, sociological charity project created for the benefit of the rest of the world population. I assert, and in my writings prove, that the citizens of a free country have both a moral right and a moral obligation to establish standards of entry into the country for visitors and especially immigrants. The core standard is similar to that of citizenship and defended similarly. Anyone who wants to enter a free country must attest to fully supporting individual rights and eschewing any action that violates them. No one proposing to enter a free country has any moral right to do so unless they fully support individual rights. Again, this is a point of consistency. And beyond this absolute minimum criteria are more practical issues, such as limiting the rate of entry to outsiders to reasonable limits. I save what may be the most important pillar for last. In a land of equal pillars, the fifth is first among equals. Voluntary financing. A government based on juristocracy is explicitly forbidden from using any coercive method, such as taxation, to fund its operations. It is important to draw a distinction between two separate things. We do need government, and by its nature, it holds monopoly on the retaliatory and ameliorative use of force. But beyond that, it may not initiate force against the innocent. The question of providing the resources to operate government is an entirely separate issue. I have argued in detail why the power to tax has historically been vastly more responsible for improper government growth than, say, not having just the right words in a constitution. Taxation is the opposite of protecting rights. It is a complete contradiction to open your constitution with flowery language about protecting rights, but then as a central feature saying, except for operations, in which case we intend to violate your property rights in any way we want. And so-called representation is irrelevant. It doesn't change the action a whit, regardless if you get some small say in it. I don't have time to get into any details, but I have established guidelines to developing voluntary measures, and I'm doing research to validate them. Effective measures are typically not immediately obvious, and in all cases, are nothing like knee-jerk conceptions some might conceive, such as a tip jar at City Hall. All I can emphasize is that voluntary financing is both morally necessary and, as a direct and logical result, immensely practical. It solves all kinds of problems, creates an entirely new context of relationship between residents and government, and is an incredibly effective means of limiting improper government expansion. So that's an outline of the system. The most important work being done now is applying and concretizing the system in two ways. The first is a proposed replacement for the existing American Constitution. My new constitution replaces the current hybrid of a federation and a federal state with a fully consistent federal state with clearly defined division of authority and responsibility between the federal and state governments. The second is developing well-thought-out, effective transition plans to either eliminate or privatize existing government activities at all levels. This collection is not conceived as some singular Big Bang transition plan, but rather as a source of actionable plans for specific end goals. So why should any of this interest you? Why should you care? After all, full freedom isn't going to happen tomorrow or next week. I think there are two compelling, personally selfish benefits you can obtain from learning more about juristocracy and helping its development. The first is it gives you a powerful and compelling intellectual arsenal to address practical questions from people about how our principles of freedom will get enacted in practice. For example, most objectivists I talk to have almost no conception of how fully private roads would work, or voluntary financing, or a host of other questions. Having a fully concretized, well-researched, and thought-out implementation plan for freedom turns you from an abstract ideologue into a well-informed person of action. The second is helping objectivism and juristocracy to become a valuable source of effective reform plans that a sincere, charismatic, principled reformer could adopt and implement. Think of Thatcher in Britain and now Milei in Argentina. Contrast with most conservative reform measures that are almost universally ineffective. Enterprise zones, school vouchers, tax cuts without spending cuts, and on, they achieve no substantial reform. We can prove that substantial reform agendas can be enacted, and a result of being an excellent resource for reform plans should be a growing interest in objectivism, which is good for all of us. Thank you.